Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the I Love Authorpreneurs campaign. Now let's introduce our host, Sharon C. Jenkins, the Master Communicator.
Hello, everyone. This is Sharon Jenkins. And I just want to say hello, hello, hello. We've got some feedback on the line, so we're going to try to do what we can to get rid of that. But I just want to tell you, we are on day 8 of this I Love Entrepreneurs campaign, and I am just thrilled beyond thrilled because I have had the opportunity to interview some great folks. I mean, they are true entrepreneurs. They are real entrepreneurs, relevant, entrepreneurial, action-oriented, and literary focused. And today I have Terry Whalen on the line. Hi, Terry.
Hey, Sharon. Great to be with you today.
You know, I am so thrilled to have you on the line. You are a prolific entrepreneur, and it is my pleasure to interview you today. Now, listening audience, let me tell you a little bit about Terry. He's an editor and author of more than 60 books and has written for more than 50 magazines. He is the former editor of Decision, the Billy Graham Association's magazine, and Terry and his wife lives in Denver. So the I Love Entrepreneurship campaign is in Denver today. How is the weather there, Terry?
It's trying to snow, Sharon. It's been snowing here for about the last 24 hours, so it's great.
Oh, I tell you. Do you have your snow boots and your shovel and your salt and all that out?
I do.
So you're ready for the snow. You know, I had the opportunity of reading this book, Billy Graham, a biography of America's greatest evangelist. And I just want to tell you, it just totally blew me away. It took me back to the core of true evangelism. I have quite a few questions for you. Are you ready?
I'm ready, Sharon. Go.
Okay. You know, once you turn me on, it's hard to turn me off. Okay. Now, what were some of the greatest struggles Billy Graham went through in childhood or as an adult that helped forge his character?
Well, he had the same kind of struggles, Sharon, that I think all of us have with the Christian life. Mr. Graham grew up on a dairy farm in Charlotte, North Carolina. And, you know, I think it does build something into your character when you have to get up at 2:30 in the morning and milk the cows. And so I think that really did build some strong things into his character. I understand from Mr. Graham's baby sister, Jean, that he used to do this Tarzan yell when he was a kid, and they think that that's what maybe developed his vocal cords, you know, so he could speak to large audiences and that kind of thing. But, you know, he went through the same kind of struggles in the Christian life once he came to faith that all of us go through. And I remember distinctly an incident at the Forest Home Conference Center after Mr. Graham had come to his own personal faith in Christ. He was starting to speak places and, you know, read his Bible. And he went out late one night, put his Bible on a stump, and got down on his knees and said, you know, God, there's some really interesting stories here in this Bible that I have. And, you know, some people wonder whether they're true or not, but I'm going to believe every story, every word in this book by faith. And so I think that's a kind of place that a lot of us have to come to in our relationship with the Lord.
So you paint Graham as someone of a practical joker as a kid. What kind of things did he do that is, especially from his family's perspective, what kind of things did he do to make everybody laugh?
Well, one of the funny things he did, back then they rode the bus to school, Sharon, and on that bus there was a knob kind of underneath the bus that you could turn, and it would disrupt the flow of gasoline to the engine. And so Billy would jump off the bus, turn that knob, and then wave real big to all the people on the bus and the bus driver, and they would roll down the road and then sputter just a few feet down, and the engine would die. And the bus driver knew that that was the kind of thing that Billy Graham was doing to his bus when he jumped out.
I tell you. I'm the mother of two boys, so I know about these practical jokes, I tell you. So although Billy Graham grew up in the segregated South, what was his relationship like with blacks? What did he learn from Reese Brown particularly?
Well, you know, that was a time when the South was very, very segregated, but Reese Brown was actually one of Mr. Graham's father's best friends. He worked as a foreman there on the farm. He was very strong, you know. Billy always admired that, but Reese was also a much decorated soldier during World War II, and, you know, one of his father's best friends. And so I think he saw that kind of interpersonal relationship between his father and Reese, and that built something, you know, wise into his life about how to relate to people across races and across cultures. And then he took that kind of experience in his life in when, you know, he started having crusades in the South, and he was one of the first people there in that part of the country to have integrated crusades where people sat next to each other, read in the different sections and stuff. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So what were some of his hobbies growing up as a kid? I'm curious about that.
You know, he loved to read. He gained that love of reading from his mother, and so he loved reading history books and that kind of thing. But Mr. Graham really liked baseball as a hobby. He thought that maybe he would even become a professional baseball player. During his childhood, he met the great Babe Ruth during his experiences there. And I understand to this day, even at the age of 96, Mr. Graham loves to watch baseball.
Oh, that is really good. That is good. Now, most people don't know that Graham went through some of his own doubts and dark nights of the soul related to the Bible. What did he conclude as a result of these experiences?
Well, he concluded that even though, you know, you got to admit, there are some different kind of stories in the Bible when you read that, you know, cover to cover. But he decided that in faith, he was going to believe every word of the scriptures were true. And, you know, he grew up originally thinking he was going to be a pastor of a church. He didn't know he was going to be an evangelist. That's just kind of a gradual process that he went through with his life. But to get to where he was traveling around doing crusades, that just didn't happen immediately.
And like with so many other evangelists or ministers, Graham's message wasn't always well received. Did that ever cause him to second guess his calling?
No. I think from the beginning, Mr. Graham knew that God had His hand on his life and really wanted him to preach the gospel message wherever he was, wherever in the world. And in the early days of the association, they made some wise decisions though about how to put together the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, and that is something they called the Modesto Manifesto. And in that Modesto Manifesto, they kind of set down some rules or some guidelines that they carry through today, and a lot of other evangelistic organizations copied those rules because of the wisdom behind them. So, for example, Mr. Graham always traveled with another man, and he never put himself in a compromising situation with a woman where, he may be tempted, but he'd have an accountability kind of partner with him in those kind of situations. They also decided that part of the problem with evangelists is they would come into town, preach their message, and then leave those people that had come to faith without any connection to the local church. So they decided early on that they were always going to work with the local church and then plug those new believers into the local church so they'd have a place to continue to grow in their faith and learn about the Bible and the scriptures long after they were gone and off somewhere else. They also decided in these Modesto manifestos that, and we talk about speaking evangelistically where you kind of exaggerate, whatever the numbers are at an event. And they decided they weren't going to do that. They were going to be real precise about the number of people that attended the meeting and the number of people that came to faith. And that's why today, even when you get a news release from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, and they've had a crusade or a festival or an event somewhere, and people come to faith, there are exact numbers in those news releases of the people that attended the event and the people that came to faith. There are no exaggeration involved.
I think that they established a great foundation for any organization who has an evangelistic ministry. I think that the hard work and the lessons learned and the experiences that Mr. Graham had and his organization had has influenced so many ministries. Particularly, I'm thinking of Joel Osteen's ministry, Night of Hope.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I know when I worked for the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, over 20 years ago, Sharon, when I went out traveling for the organization, they gave me a little book where I wrote down every penny that I spent and a little pocket in the back that I tucked the receipts in. And by golly, you had to tally up, when you went back to the penny, kind of thing. And so, I think that's good, so that it keeps everybody on the straight and narrow. And they've never had a problem over the years because of the right way that they've handled themselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, his better half, Ruth Graham, was an integral part of his ministry. How did they balance travel and family? He has how many children? Is it four?
I think they have five children. Yes, and
five children.
Yeah, and Ruth actually would keep the home fires burning, I guess is what I'd say, because back at that point in history, they would have these meetings, and they would go on for weeks. And so, like, when Mr. Graham was in Australia, for example, they would go all over Australia and spend, a lot of time in each location throughout the continent over there. So that meant that he was gone from home for, weeks and several months, at a single crack there. So Ruth very much kept things going on the home front, but they always talk about – the kids have always talked about how whenever Daddy came home, that was a big event, and so they focused on him, and the family still to this day continues to be very very close to each other and very involved in each other's lives, children, grandchildren, great grandchildren, all that kind of thing goes on.
Hmm. And many people don't know that Billy nearly died in an airline crash. What happened? Tell us the story.
Well, Sharon, you can imagine as many plane flights as somebody like Billy Graham has taken over the years, he's got to have just one airplane story, don't you think? And he certainly did.
Mm-hmm.
it was back in the days when he was just starting to be an evangelist. He was really with Youth for Christ and was traveling over the Canadian Rockies, and it was snowing. And it was late at night. Billy was the only person that was awake. The stewardess came through and told him that they were going to have to put down the plane and sort of crash land at a place that they weren't planning on landing. And so they did. They woke everybody up and did have a sort of a bumpy landing, brought the plane in, and they sort of, got everybody over to a local hotel, put everybody in the room, and then late at night, Mr. Graham had a big, huge pounding on his door, and he got up, and there was a Canadian Mountie standing there, and he was ready to arrest Billy Graham because the person that had been staying in that room had been a thief, and he was going to haul him off to jail. So he had to roust up the pilot and the flight attendant to vouch for him that he had nothing to do with that incident. And but it did make for sort of dramatic storytelling there.
My goodness gracious, that was an evening I'm sure he'll never forget. And now we'll never forget it.
Absolutely.
So what was the Modesto Manifesto, excuse me, and how did this shape the future of Graham's life and organization? You made mention to it earlier, the Modesto Manifesto.
Yeah, these are those rules that the early team members of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Associates sort of set down, and they're the rules that kind of guide the organization as far as being precise about counting numbers, plugging people into the local church, always working with the local church. I remember back when I worked at the association, they were getting invitations from all over the country, and they had to get a certain number of local churches, involved with the invitation for Mr. Graham to come before he would actually put that meeting on his schedule and know that he was coming to a particular place. And I think there's a lot of wisdom about the way that they did that kind of thing. I mean, people in the press, Sharon, are always looking, they want to know, is there any dirt, out there, or any foibles, of Billy Graham. And nobody's ever been able to find it because of kind of the wise way they set up the organization from the very beginning.
I think that they were very in tune with the character of Christ, and their intention was to model that organization based on his principles, foundational truths of Christianity. And I think that they embraced that, and they purposed in their heart to be a ministry of integrity. It makes a big difference when you make that choice.
It does. It does. And they're carrying through to this day. I mean, Franklin Graham is very much carrying on the public ministry of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. His son, Franklin's oldest son, Will, is actually an associate evangelist now and doing his own meetings out there around the country and in other places outside of the U.S. even.
And I'm curious, Mr. Graham's involvement with several presidents was well known. Tell us the story of his relationship with Dwight Eisenhower and what came of that.
Yeah, he met Dwight Eisenhower when he was the Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces at the end of World War II, so he knew Dwight Eisenhower, and then Dwight Eisenhower got elected President of the United States, and Mr. Graham continued his relationship with Dwight Eisenhower after he became President, and it was really during one of those meetings with Dwight Eisenhower that Billy Graham suggested that they have a national prayer breakfast that the president would attend, and that tradition started back then with Dwight Eisenhower and continues today. Actually, Billy Graham spoke at the first 15 of those national prayer breakfasts. And, you know, they just had one here in the last few weeks in Washington, and President Barack Obama attended the national prayer breakfast. And that kind of tradition goes back to Billy Graham and his relationship with Dwight Eisenhower.
So you made mention President Obama. Can you tell us about the time that the two met Mr. Graham and President Obama?
Yeah, you know, Mr. Graham has had a relationship with every president since Dwight Eisenhower, including Barack Obama. Actually, Barack Obama is the only sitting president of the United States that's actually met with Billy Graham in his home. You know, Mr. Graham at 96 now doesn't get out in the public too much. And so actually Barack Obama and his family were vacationing there close to Montreat, North Carolina, where Billy Graham lives. And they asked him if he'd like to come by and see Billy Graham. And he said, sure. So he went by, and they had time where, you know, Billy Graham prayed for Barack Obama, and Barack Obama prayed for Billy Graham. So they had that kind of exchange right there in Mr. Graham's house.
What about President Richard Nixon? Graham had an association with him, but there became a bit of a problem with that association. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, you can imagine when the Watergate tapes came out of the type of four-letter words and language that Richard Nixon used, Mr. Graham was pretty chagrined about that, as you can imagine, because of his close association with Richard Nixon. You know, Richard Nixon attended some of his crusade meetings, sat on the platform, all that kind of thing, but he did, even in the midst of all that, Sharon, Billy Graham still maintained his relationship with President Nixon and the Nixon family, so that even after President Nixon resigned and left office in disgrace, Mr. Graham actually conducted Richard Nixon's funeral. So even though there was some rough periods there with the kind of information that was coming out, Billy Graham has maintained his relationship with all those families over the years, which has been amazing.
That sounds like the true love of Christ to me. That's what that sounds like.
It is, absolutely.
So I'm curious. We know, we're very familiar in America about Mr. Graham's work, evangelistic work, but what about in other parts of the world?
Well, Billy Graham has spoken face-to-face, preached the gospel message of Jesus Christ to more people than anybody else on the planet. And so he's had crusades on every major continent. He's met leaders of every different country where he goes. And I mean, it was one day in South Korea that he spoke to the largest crowd face to face that's ever been gathered on the planet in South Korea. And so he's had those kinds of experiences around the world of preaching the gospel. I remember I interviewed Leighton Ford, who was an associate evangelist with Mr. Graham for 30 years. Leighton actually is Billy Graham's brother-in-law. Leighton's wife, Jean Ford, is Billy Graham's youngest baby sister, actually. And Leighton Ford told the story where he was preaching. They would come in as associate evangelists, and they'd preach before Mr. Graham came. You know, he would come in and preach the last couple of nights of a crusade. And so one day, Billy actually came a little early to the meeting and sat in the back of the crusade. And you know how these guys travel. I mean, I don't know if you do or not, Sharon. When they travel, they kind of lower their profile. They usually wear a ball cap, you know, and sunglasses. And so, you know, it's hard to recognize Billy Graham when you put a ball cap and sunglasses on the guy. And so that particular night, he was sitting in the back of the stadium, and Leighton Ford was preaching, his brother-in-law, and he could see that this man sitting in front of him was kind of agitated, you know, with the message. And when they gave the invitation and people started coming to the front, he could see that this man was sort of wiggling around like he wanted to get up and go to the front. And so Billy Graham actually reached up and tapped him on the shoulder and asked him if he wanted to go forward and make a decision for Jesus. And he looked at him hard, didn't recognize him at all, and he said, no. He said, I think I'm going to wait till the big guy comes.
That is funny.
He's going to wait a few more nights.
That is funny. So this is my final question, and you know I have loved talking about Mr. Graham with you, by the way. In researching and writing about Graham, what are some of the most important character qualities you saw in him, and how can we nurture these in our own lives?
Well, that's a great question, Sharon. Mr. Graham says that if he had to live his life over again, he would spend more time in prayer and more time reading the Bible. And, you know, here's a guy that prayed a lot and read the Bible a lot, but he would still do it more if he had to do it over again. And I think those are great lessons for us. I mean, we have Bibles in our houses, and we have them in all different kinds of translations. What are we really doing to read those scriptures on a daily basis and apply that kind of information to our lives? That's a great lesson there. And then we have one of the most amazing resources as believers that we can talk to the Lord of the universe through prayer. How often are we using that resource, and can we use it more in our lives? And I think the answer is yes, that we need to gain that insight from somebody like Billy Graham.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I want to say thank you for writing a book of this nature, simply because we all need to leave a literary legacy. And I can remember how, as I went through the pages of the book, I was reminded of certain instances, and it helped build my faith. So I just want you to know that this book is already performing miracles in the lives of believers and unbelievers.
Well, thank you, Sharon. It's been an honor to do that. I just love the life of Billy Graham. It's been a great privilege to do that. I had a radio talk show host in Florida a few weeks ago interview me, and she was talking about how she read part of the book and wept actually reading the book. And then she opened up that part of the book and read it to her audience, you know, on the air. So I think it's amazing that kind of reaction that people can have from this book. So one of the things I like about it, the size of the book is it's an easy read. You know, kids can read it. They have to write reports on famous people and that kind of thing. It's an easy reading book about the life of Billy Graham.
Absolutely. And it gives us an up-close and personal view of his life, which is really a great treat. So if our listening audience wants to contact you, how can they do that, Terry Whalen?
Well, one of the best ways to get the book, it's available in bookstores everywhere, but I would encourage them to go by my website that I've built for the book. It's at billygrahambio.com. Billy Graham bio, and they can buy it from their favorite bookstore. They can get an autographed copy from me or whatever they'd like to do, Sharon. And then as far as reaching me, I'm one of the easiest guys to reach out there, but they can just use my name, terrywhalen.com, and contact me that way. It's a great way to reach me.
Well, I want to thank you again for sharing this 30 minutes with me, especially on a snowy Sunday. I've enjoyed our time together.
It's been a privilege, Sharon, and let's do it again one of these days.
Okay, that sounds like fun to me, too. Listening audience, we just want to say thank you for tuning in today. And tomorrow we have a lot of fun-filled activities for our authorpreneurs or aspiring authorpreneurs. Let's see what's on the agenda. Oh, we have Joel Friedlander tomorrow at 6 p.m. Central Time. You do not want to miss that. I tell you. And then on Tuesday, we have Cashelle Kelly and Bobby Mills is going to be local here in Houston, Texas. And Stacy Hall at 8 p.m. Central Time is doing a networking for authors seminar. So you don't want to miss that. Anyway, thank you for tuning in today. Thanks again, Terry. And listening audience,
thank you,
what I want to say is, oh, you're welcome. I want to say to you, keep writing, keep writing, keep reading, and keep loving each other. Have a great day. Bye-bye.